Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 10 of Season 5 of Over a Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off Week 2 is Josh Horowitz. Welcome, Josh.
Well, hello there.
Why don't you tell people what happens in Minute 10? Where does Minute 10 begin and end?
We're still talking Die Hard 2. Minute 10 starts with a bunch of grinning henchmen and ends with said henchmen picking up a gift package.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very mysterious.
What could it be?
We'll have to wait and find out what happens there, how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday we ended things with Garber, Cochran, and Miller drinking beer, or pretending to drink beer at least. Sitting at the bar.
Right. Miller drinking other... Miller, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And giving an update on what's going on. And we ended things yesterday with Garber just saying the word God. And now we get the full thing where he goes, God loves the infantry. Amen.
Ah.
So he gets to finish his thought on that one. I mean, it happens to be a great line. God loves the infantry. You know, meaning that we're glad that it's bad weather. Now, I mean, if you look at their whole plan of what they want to do, I don't know if bad weather is really a good thing for them, because they do want, Esperanza's plane to land. But, okay, we'll give it to them.
Well, they want it to, be in difficult circumstances for people to stop them, I guess.
That's right. I guess so. That's true. And then Miller responds by saying, amen. And then Garber turns to both Miller and Cochran and goes, carry out your assignments. And, it's just strange the way that, they're still giving these type of – they're giving it an order. Like, they're still in military mode, I guess you can say, even though they're sitting there pretending to drink beers.
Mm-hmm.
And then
– once a soldier, always a soldier.
Apparently. Yeah. And then we see a shot of Cochran's watch, but it's upside down, and we can actually see what time it says on it. Okay. It says that it is 3:51. And then we see a shot of Garber's watch. We see it's the exact same watch. I wasn't able to make out what the make is of the watch, but it looks very similar. But, and it also shows that it is 3:51. But my biggest question is why are they still using analog watches? If they want to...
Because that makes it so when you synchronize watches, it's more dramatic.
Oh, okay. But that's the only reason that you would do that.
It's a critical part of the plan. You synchronize watches. I mean, God forbid if one of the watches was off, or even worse, what if one of them had forgotten to switch from daylight saving time?
Yeah, that could be a big problem. Well, again, it's December. So, what can I tell you? It reminds me of, you've ever heard of the Darwin Awards?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So one of the years, the person who quote unquote won the Darwin Award were terrorists that blew themselves up an hour before they were in a populated area when they were on their way to the area, because they didn't change their clocks to daylight savings.
They didn't synchronize their, you see,
there you go.
So you're right. There's something there.
That is true. That is true.
So I knew somebody, or I still know them, who won an honorary Darwin Award.
Didn't win the full
award because he's still alive.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But he did something that was not the smartest. It really doesn't have anything to do with Die Hard, but I can relay the story at least. Apparently, he was – I don't know if he was actually in college at the time or something like that, but he was very much into science, and I guess they were demonstrating – some way that you could actually take liquid nitrogen and you could put it in your mouth and be able to not suffer ill effects if you do something right. And this person that I knew had gotten it in his mind that he could actually swallow liquid nitrogen. And if you do it in the right way, that there will be no ill effects. And so with his confidence and his knowledge, he decided to show that he could do this. And so he took liquid nitrogen, and he put it in his mouth, and he truly did swallow. And then about a second later, he collapsed, and so did his lungs.
What a surprise.
And he was quickly taken to the hospital, where he had extensive damage, I guess, to his lungs. You know, they had collapsed and, you know, had to be reinflated and stuff. And, you know, he went through, you know, a lot of rehab after that. But he lived to tell the tale. And, yeah, I met him when I was in my college days, I remember later, and hearing this story. And if you go
well,
on
you
to
knew
the
him
Darwin
before
Awards
or after
website,
this happened?
After.
Oh, you only met him afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And supposedly, you know, I know that it's up there on the Darwin Awards site. There were some people who claimed that, oh, no, this couldn't have happened because of X, Y, and Z. But, I mean, I met the guy who it happened
to.
So. Crazy.
Yeah. I think crazy is a good word there. Most people who make it on the Darwin Awards are fit into that category. And then they decide to synchronize their watches. And then Garber says, 1551, mark, check. And we see them, you know, all dramatically synchronizing their watches there, which is pretty funny. So this goes back to what we were talking about earlier this week, where, you know, we were talking about when sunset is. And, you know, sunset is an hour after this. Now, I find it really interesting that sunset on that day was at 16:51 instead of 15:51. You know, it's exactly an hour later. You know, so the fact that the 51 lines up with both of them was really interesting. But, you know, if it you know, I guess according to them, at least, it's not dark yet, even though there are points in the movie beforehand, as we discussed earlier this week, where it looks like it's already dusk or even, you know, twilight, I guess you can say. So I don't know. Not really sure about that one. And then
film continuity.
Yeah, it's true. And then Miller, you know, gets up from the table and leaves and says later. And then they respond, adios. And then we get a shot of the table and we can see three beer mugs there that are all half full.
Yeah.
And we see three bottles of light beer. And then Miller reaches down to pick up the package that's on the ground. And then, you know, he starts walking away and he walks past John, who's lighting up a cigarette while he's sitting in the bar. Back where the days when people could smoke anywhere, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a nice way. You know, I still have problems when people are smoking in places they shouldn't. And I say to them, can you maybe, you know, put that out or whatever? And they're like, why does it bother you? Yeah, I don't like those type of responses. But oh well. And then, I mean, it's a great transition shot because, you know, we see Miller walking past John, and then we see John's eyes look back over to where Miller was. You know, he sees Cochran and Garber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he looks over and he sees them and he's watching them, and then we see two policemen show up. You know, they come into the bar. And we hear one of them say out loud, hey, it's cold out there, man. I stopped my feet for 5 minutes. And the other one says, two cappuccinos, make it fast. So as this is happening, we see that Cochran removes the earpiece from his ear where he was listening about the weather. Cochran puts it away. And then we see that you know, the camera then pans down and we see Garber nudging a package with his foot towards where Cochran is sitting.
Right, doesn't you want the cops to notice it. Yes.
That's right. And as Garber is doing that, we see his eyes shifting around, you know, looking around to see who's looking at them. And then they give us a shot of John looking at them suspiciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the cops go to get their cappuccinos. Now, if you watch it slowly, you can see who the cops are. But we're going to wait until Monday to tell people who they are, or at least who one of them is.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're paying attention... If you're paying attention, you'll know who it is. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a guy that really stands out that's next to the cops that's wearing this like really really loud shirt with a Redskins hat and like glasses that looks totally out of place there.
Yeah. Oh, I see here the Paisley shirt.
Yes. Now, I mean, for
Wow.
me, the surprising thing is if this was filmed in LAX, so, you know, the guy knew that he was supposed to be taking that this takes place in Washington, so he knew to put on a Redskins stuff. So that works also really well.
Or as they call it today, the Washington Football Club. Or no, they gave it a new name, didn't
They
they?
did give them a new name, yeah. That's
What are they like, the Defenders or the
something like that.
forget.
Yeah, they
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a little bit of a problem with the fact that they keep changing sports names. You know, I saw that like the what's the Cleveland Club now known as? I don't even know, like the I don't know, the Gladiators, the baseball team.
They're not.
They changed them. They're not the Indians anymore. They're something else.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, they keep doing that. I forget what
I
the
saw that there was like a game, like the Yankees were playing the Cleveland something, and I was like, huh? Who are
Guardians, they're
they?
called.
Guardians.
Cleveland
That's right.
Guardians,
The
yeah.
Guardians. I was like, who the hell are the Guardians?
And what the Washington team is known as, the Washington Commanders. That is a cool name, though. I like that better.
It's a cool name, but I don't know. It's they're all tainted now. The names are tainted because they've been changed to protect the innocent, or to protect the non-innocent or whatever. I don't know. And then we get another shot of John looking over at both Garber and Cochran as Garber then bends down. They actually move over and Cochran picks up the package that's below him. So it's all very suspicious looking. And it's a good thing that John is bored and doesn't have anything to do before Holly gets in so that he's able to actually see these things. Because otherwise, how would he know?
And you notice that the gifts are wrapped in a very evil, dark color.
Yes. They're not brightly colored like you would think.
If
Did
you
you
want to
notice
give an
that?
evil gift, you use that color.
That's right. Did you notice that on all the little tables in the bar, there are like these red flowers that look really strange? That don't really fit
Oh,
in with.
yeah. They're probably fake.
I would hope so, because they don't really fit in with the winter feel. But the end, this is LA, so they could be real. Who knows? Who knows? And that's pretty much how this minute ends. As the package is being picked up. So is there anything
Yeah.
else you want to say about the minute before we get
Well,
into the script?
do you think that John is mistrustful of them because of all that Miller Lite that happens to be on that table?
That wasn't Trump, you mean?
Just
You're saying the leftover Miller Lite or the fact that they're drinking Miller Lite?
the fact that they have so many bottles of Miller Lite that's up there, and the fact that it's Miller Lite. I mean, is he thinking that's it? Shenanigans are coming?
It could be. That's very possible.
That's pretty much all I got for this.
Okay, so the script again has a few little changes. Nothing drastic, but there's a few changes in the dialogue. So Garber then says, "Carry out your assignment. We'll regroup at Field HQ," and then they set their watches, and it does say 3:51 for them to do it. Then it says a beat after Miller's exit. Two airport cops in snowflake jackets come into the bar. Seeing them, the bartender is already pouring coffee for them. But Garber and Cochran also see the cops, and very casually, Cochran pulls the earplug from his ear. Equally casually, Garber uses his foot to slide the two long Christmas packages at his feet under the table. This gets McLean's attention. His eyes narrow. He looks from the two ordinary-looking men towards the airport cops, wondering why they got fidgety. Now he watches Garber and Cochran, who looks at his watch, signals Cochran. Both rise, but as Cochran bends to pick up his wrapped package, and as he moves, something dangles inside his jacket. Is it a holster? So that we don't see here. We don't get to see any holster, which would have been interesting, that he saw it. Maybe on Monday we'll be able to see that there is one. I don't know. I don't think so. That's my guess. But I like the way that they describe things here. That they describe that everyone is more acute to what's going on around them.
I wonder if a lot of that comes from the fact that this was a novel originally. It had nothing to
Yes.
do with Die Hard, but
No.
they had a lot of good material to draw from, I guess, in that novel. Have you had a chance to read it? Was it called like 58 minutes or
I
something
read
or?
58 Minutes by Walter
Yeah.
Wager back when it came out, when it came out in 1990, before, I don't remember if it was before I saw the movie or after I saw the movie. I have not been able to get a copy of it because the only copies I can find are like, you know, collector's items, because it's so rare that I haven't been able to find a copy. I've really tried hard, but no. So the only thing I remember is that in 58 Minutes, the characters, which obviously it's not John McClane, his wife's plane is supposed to land in 58 minutes, and that terrorists take over the airport. How it happens and when it happens, you know, I'm not really sure. I probably should try and find a
digital
synopsis
copy out there somewhere.
No, I haven't been able to find a digital copy either. I really tried. Mm. Yeah, I found a whole bunch of like fake digital copies, which didn't help me.
Oh.
You know, I almost spent money on fake. Maybe there's one that there's one that I actually paid for, and then I, you know, quickly got rid of it because I saw that it wasn't it.
Oh. I'll have to check out at the LA Public Library, see if there's a copy floating around somewhere.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been able to. I mean, if you go into Wikipedia, you can get a little bit of an outline of it. Here, I'll give you the quick paragraph that it has here. It says, Frank Malone is a divorced NYPD captain who is waiting at JFK in New York City for his young daughter to arrive from California as he's going to spend Christmas with her. Unfortunately, a mysterious man known as Number One, I guess it's, you know, from Star Trek. Maybe it's Riker.
Number One.
Number One. A mysterious man known as Number One calls the control tower and tells the crew of the airport that he has cut the power to the runway lights of JFK and every airport in the vicinity and has hijacked their equipment, leaving them with only 58 minutes to meet their demands until the first plane, which carries Frank's daughter, runs out of fuel and crashes. With a massive blizzard coming in, the planes have nowhere else to go. Frank must jump into action and save his daughter and the passengers of the other planes, which are all circling overhead within 58 minutes. So,
Now, did you say this was by Walter Wager?
Walter Wager.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to check out a copy from the LA Public Library. I will hold it for you for the next time you come to Los Angeles.
I don't think that's going to happen. Very... Why don't you just photocopy every page?
I'll give it a read. Yeah.
Photocopy every page.
I put a hold on it.
You put a hold on it because someone else is already using it?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, somebody. Or no, it's at a different branch. They'll send it to my North Hollywood branch pretty soon.
Okay, well, enjoy and keep me posted as to what you think of it.
Yes. Okay.
All right, so every Friday we have a segment called Where Are They Up To This Weekend? Which I'm sure Josh has been wondering all week, if not longer. What does that mean? What am I gonna throw at Josh to surprise him with? Okay, the answer is this. I decided that we're gonna check in on the two movies that Josh did minute by minute to find out where they are up to between minutes 10 and 11. So we're gonna check Josh's memory to see if he knows, you know, approximately where things are. So let's start with Big Trouble in Little China. Okay, do you have any idea what's going on between minutes 10 and 11? Again, I'll give you a little bit of leeway.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. 10 and 11. I'm going to guess that if we're not in the alley at this point, we're pretty close, or we're at the airport where Jack and Wang are trying to get Miao Yin back from the Lords of Death.
All right. I will give you credit for that. They are at the airport. Okay. The plane arrives at the airport. We see, you know, Jack, and he's told that he's looking for a green-eyed woman.
Yes, girl with green eyes.
That's right. And he walks over to a different woman, thinking that maybe it's her. And that's Kim Cattrall, right?
That is Kim Cattrall. Yes, as Gracie Law.
There you go. All right, that's the first one. So, Buckaroo Banzai. Mm. Where do you think they are there between minutes 10 and 11?
You see now that there's two versions of Buckaroo Banzai. If you're talking about the one where we have that alternate opening, that's like another 2 or 3 minutes that we add on.
Okay, this is the version I checked has 142 minutes in it. Oh, sorry, it's an hour and 42 minutes. Excuse me.
Okay, then it's probably the regular version. So let's see, 10 minutes in. We are probably, if we haven't gone through the mountain, we're pretty close to that point.
We are going through the mountain. There you go.
We're going through the mountain. Okay.
We are going through the mountain, which is great special effects. It was very interesting watching the whole thing going through the mountain.
Yeah, that was, I believe that was CG. That was like early CG that they were using for that sequence.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. So I'm very impressed that you were able to figure out where those movies are. So
yeah. Well,
so now we know where they are up to this weekend. I know. Well, yeah. Again, I'm trying to. I'm not asking you to try and guess something that you have no clue about. So you know, I wanted to see how good your memory is on those movies.
Yeah, so still got it.
There you go. Great. I appreciate that. All right. So, Josh, for one last time, do you want to tell people how they can find Josh Horowitz?
Sure. You can find Josh Horowitz on joshhorowitz.com. I've got all my great demo reels on there and samples of some of the audiobooks that I've done, as well as a listing of all the different Movies by Minutes podcasts that I've either been a guest on or I've co-hosted, and I'll be sure to be adding this one as well.
There you go.
The last one that I did was that was the Silverado Minute. That was a collaboration with my fellow co-host Brett Stillo, where we discussed the movie Silverado 1 minute at a time, and they got a bunch of movies
about 5 minutes
to
it.
Do. Well, normally we do 5 minutes, yeah. But for that one, we had to do 1 minute. It was like a total mind shift. As it is, you know, talking about this 1 minute is just—I don't know.
No, what I meant is that you did 5 episodes of a minute each. That's what I meant. You still did 5 minutes.
Five. Yes, we did. Yeah. But not 5 minutes at a time.
No.
Yes. Yes, if you want to go through the high speed version of Movies by Minutes, you have to listen to 5 minutes of Trouble, where we talk about Big Trouble in Little China, 5 minutes each episode, or 5 minutes of Bonsai, 5 minutes at a time. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Rob, I've had a great time discussing this film.
Yeah, so have I.
I appreciate you reaching out.
I appreciate you you saying yes.
Sure thing.
You had me at yes. So I mentioned at the beginning of the week that because this was the first time that you've seen Die Hard, so Die Hard 2, is there anything that jumped out at you that you know, that you really liked about the movie or that you didn't like about the movie or, you know, that you were able to guess or that you were surprised, you know, things like that?
Mm. So as I was telling you earlier, yeah, I hadn't seen this film before. I had seen the first Die Hard, but it was a long time ago. So I watched this, and then after that, I went back and I rented Die Hard 1. And it's striking to see the differences between the two movies. I mean, certainly, you know, they found a good formula, and they wanted to emulate a lot of that stuff in the second one. I felt that there was a surprising amount of profanity, and it felt like we didn't really need it, but you know, there it was. You know, this is an early 90s film. You want to get that edginess that you can only get in the movies. Some of the violence was a little surprising too, and just the fact that they dealt with you know, like air disasters in the way that they did. It just, I guess, living in a 9/11 post 9/11 world, it almost seems like they kind of gloss over the tragedy.
Right.
A whole plane going down and,
correct.
You know, like if a plane goes down, then they're like, okay, we'll just close off that runway and we'll just keep going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were certain elements in this movie that were suspended for dramatic license.
Yeah.
But it was a fun movie to watch. Entertaining, you know, good action, good, you know, performances overall. I like Die Hard 1 better just because you kind of get a sense that John's character is more mortal in that one. You know, he's bloody. He's kind of like an unlikely hero in this case. But here he tends to go a bit more Rambo than he did. Though he does comment quite a bit that, you know, about, oh, how can this be happening to me again?
Right.
So kind of like the tongue-in-cheek stuff there.
Yeah. Were you able to guess, you know, the fact that blue light was part of it?
Uh, I That did come as a little bit of a shock. Just the fact that, you know, the one team, I don't know, I don't want to spoil it, of course, but, you know, that the, you know, different loyalties were not exactly where you thought they were.
Right. Okay.
Actually, the thing that surprised me the most was the presence of Dennis France.
Yes.
As the, you know, the mean
Carmine.
Cop,
Carmine.
Basically. Yeah. And this was around the same time that he had started NYPD Blue.
No,
right?
NYPD Blue started 4 years later, 1994.
Okay, not all right. A little bit earlier then, but I mean, it's definitely him.
And yeah,
I'm sure that his performance in this didn't hurt his chances of getting a show like that.
No, not at all.
No, that was fun to see.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you very much for that insight. As I said, you know, it's nice to be able to hear the viewpoint of someone of something that I can never relive. You know, the first time of watching Die Hard 2. So.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for that insight.
But is it a Christmas movie? Is this one a Christmas movie?
You know, I think this is less of a Christmas movie than the first one. But
I mean,
even
it has gifts, evil gifts, yes, nonetheless. Have, but...
evil wrapping paper.
Evil wrapping paper, right?
Yes. And yeah, so, all right, well, finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Route Minute. You can find me on my website, movierouteminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So once again, thank you very much, Josh, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I will be back on Monday with a brand new guest, where we will have more things to talk about with Die Hard 2. So everyone have a great weekend, and until Monday, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,